All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry and I get the honor of being your host today here on Veterans Radio. And we encourage you to participate in our program, so we want you to give us a call. The number here is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Got a couple of announcements that I want to make. Number one is from our home station, WAAM. And WAM Radio has been granted FCC approval to build out and start broadcasting over FM, which is kind of cool, I think. They need to raise about $60,000 to make that happen. And so they're asking support from the listeners to make it occur. We have until mid-June, which is just this week, to raise the funds given current engineering studies and site plans. So what we want you to do is to go to the GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. Type into the search bar WAM Radio and donate as much as you can. This greatly increase the quality and reach within our existing Southeast Michigan listening area. The FM signal will be clear and will be present 24 hours a day. And the FM signal will seem... I love this line. The FM signal will carry the same great conservative flamethrower programming that the existing AM signal does. WAM Radio's mission has and always will be to save the republic politically, culturally, and spiritually. WAM is calling on you, the listener, to help them in that mission. So go to GoFundMe.com and type in the search bar WAM Radio and donate. This is a great opportunity for WAM to extend their listening audience. To have a better signal, to go 24 hours a day. The signal doesn't drop at night, which is always cool. And so we want to make sure that you do support our home station here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's WAAM Talk Radio 1600. So go to GoFundMe.com, type in the search bar WAM Radio, and donate as much as you feel that you can. Thank you for it. All right, the other thing that's coming up that is really important to me, my wife, and a number of veterans that I know is that Flag Day is coming up on Thursday the 14th. Fly your flag. Fly your flag. That's an order. And we're a firm believer of flying your flag every day, but if you can't fly it every day, at least get it out there for the special occasions. And Flag Day, as I mentioned, does come up on the 14th, and it's National Flag Day, and make sure it's a good, clean flag, new flag. If you need a new flag, there are lots of places that you can get them in the local area and around the country, but fly it out there. Let's surprise everybody. Wouldn't it be great to go down the block in your neighborhood and see a flag on every single house? It's awe-inspiring. It brings tears to your eyes, and it's the right thing to do. And this is a way that we can honor our country just on one day of the year. And don't put it away too long because you've got 4th of July coming up and so forth. And we are firm believers here at WAAM and on Veterans Radio, of course, is to fly your flag all the time. So that's just a little paid political announcement from the staff here at Veterans Radio. So we want to thank you for listening. All right, Ed, as I mentioned, there are a number of other things that are going on around the area with the 4th of July coming up. But the one thing that I noticed is I want you to pay attention to what's happening over here at the Yankee Air Museum. And the Yankee Air Museum, the Thunder Over Michigan is going to be coming up over Labor Day this year, which is really convenient for a lot of people to go out there. And so the Air Force is going to be there. There's a great static display. They're just sending out more and more information. So just mark on your calendar Labor Day 2018. Get on over to the Yankee Air Museum, and you're going to see airplanes like you've never seen them before. So, and if you want more information on that, you can go to yankeeairmuseum.org. So that's another announcement that we wanted to make for you. Right now, I've got a great organization that I want to talk about, and I've got a great representative from that organization that's going to be on our program. And we've talked a little bit about this in the past, but the organization is Warriors and Caregivers United. And this is kind of an unusual organization. It's local here in Ann Arbor, but it's expanding and growing and hopefully by leaps and bounds. You know, there are many, many organizations out there that will help veterans and their families. This one is going to help their caregivers. And As a veteran, if without my caregiver at home right now, I don't know if I would have survived coming home myself. And there are so many of us out there that if it wasn't for our family and our loved ones, that we would have had a much more difficult time. And my guest today has had a very difficult time, but she's dedicated herself to this organization, and I'm going to bring her on right now. And that is Lauren Bowen. And Lauren, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Having me.
How are you this afternoon?
Not too bad. We're doing pretty well over here. Nice rainy day.
Well, yes, it is. It's very nice. I don't know how much you want to tell about your own story of how you got involved in this. I'll let you kind of do that yourself. But it's a very moving and very touching story. And if you care to share that with our audience, it would be great.
Sure. I have no problem sharing. What's the point of having a story if you can't share it?
Right.
So I got involved in WACU, Warriors and Caregivers, after my husband passed away. So my husband, March of, what was it, 2015? About 2.5 years ago, my husband went missing on the 31st. I woke up, he wasn't home. My mother-in-law found a note saying that he had no choice but to kill himself and that he just couldn't take the pain anymore. And for 3 weeks, we searched for him. So at the time, I had a 9-month-old, my daughter, and a 2.5-year-old, my son.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, three weeks we looked. We passed out flyers. There were all different organizations looking for him. My brother-in-law and my brother, by the time they drove around passing out flyers, searching any field or parking lot they could think of. But eventually they found him by helicopter. They found his car and he shot himself. So then after that happened, it was a rocky road.
As you can imagine,
to recover. You know, my husband, obviously, he had PTSD, mm-hmm. post-traumatic stress disorder. And I was his caregiver. And so after he passed away, I was very lost and I felt very alone. And I didn't know of any organizations that catered to caregivers and their families and the veteran. And John Kinzinger, the president, actually reached out to me about a month or two after my husband passed. And I just casually, at first, we had coffee. And then a couple weeks later, he invited me to a dinner. And ever since then, I've been going to their events. I'm now a member of the board, and it's a great organization.
It is a great organization.
Yeah.
And John can recruit and help anybody. Anybody needs help, just call John.
You don't expect it. You know, he came talking to me. I did not expect to be where I am now with these guys, but I'm happy it worked out that way.
Well, it is a great organization, and right on their website, which is WACU.org, it's just Warriors and Caregivers United. Their mission, it looks like, it says, are you a veteran or have a loved one that's a veteran? Have you been struggling to find your way? Would you like to connect with others who have been there too? Join us. Tell me a little bit about what they do and some of their events, and I know that you've got a big one coming up.
Yes. So, what is WACU? WACU, I guess the website says it all. It's an organization dedicated to serving veterans and their caregivers. It gives them knowledge of resources, social activities, and a community for both the veterans, caregivers, and their families. The community is probably the most unique thing that WACU does. You go to these events and you really feel like you belong and you're normal and people understand you, and you don't have to talk about anything that's gone on if you want. You're there and you just know that people understand and they're there and they care. I think that's what really drew me to WACU in the first place. And so the vets can make friends with other vets, caregivers can bond with other caregivers, and they are encouraged to take care of themselves so that they can care for their families. The kids play with other kids of veterans who are struggling so they don't feel like their families are so different. And so the hope is that in this community that it will aid in the prevention of veteran suicide among other obstacles that vets face.
Right, and I know that a lot of the mentors and volunteers for the group are Vietnam veterans and their families, who just want to make sure that we can help out this next generation of veterans.
Yes. Yep. There's a lot of Vietnam veterans on the board, and they're great guys. And they really, I mean, they really do. They really do care about the younger vets coming in, the older vets. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't know anybody in the group, it's a very open and very caring environment when you come to our events.
There are a lot of events, and I'm just looking at your calendar, and I want people to look at the calendar because there are other things other than what Lauren wants to talk about on there. So, Lauren, what is the fundraiser that you're looking at?
So what I am helping or coordinating along with Stephanie, the events coordinator of WACU, is a walk and roll. So it's a 5K walk, which is about 3 miles of walking or rolling. If you can't walk, you can roll. Take your wheelchair, have someone push us, bring your kids, roll them in the stroller. So it's about 3 miles, and it's for the 22 a day. So it's walk and roll for the 22. It's to raise awareness for the 22 vets a day that commit suicide. So this is very near and dear to my heart because I am one of the families left behind. So it's to raise awareness, to try and end the 22 a day, and then show the families of the people that are left behind that you're not alone and people care, and we want to stop, you know, end it in the end. And so it's we will start at 10 a.m. It'll be check-in, and we'll have a couple activities for the families. There's going to be a bunch of booths of different organizations, veterans organizations there that have agreed to come and kind of spread the word about what they do so that, you know, if you're new, you don't know all the stuff that's out there in Michigan, you come, you show up, you look at all the different booths, all the different things we have going on, go for a walk. Cottage Inn is a sponsor, so there will be free pizza afterwards.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah.
Make it well worth your while. And when is this going to be? When is this going to be held?
This will be July 7th.
And where?
At the Ann Arbor VA.
Okay.
So we'll begin at the Ann Arbor VA, and then we're going to be walking up past U of M, you know, past the VA, past U of M, and up to Huron Street and back.
Okay.
And so there's going to be, I mean, it's going to be hard to miss us walking, which is the point, right?
Right, yes. No, we want everybody out there to be walking to bring awareness to the idea that these veterans are still, unfortunately, committing suicide at the rate of over 20 a day. We can't tolerate that. That can't be done. And
no, it can't. It's time to put an end to it.
Yes, and so we have to make sure that the veterans themselves, are aware that there are people that want to help them, but they have to take that step as well and, you know, ask for a little help. Don't be a macho guy or a woman, you know, just because. You have to ask for help, and if you ask, then there's going to be more people that want to help than you'll ever imagine.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people care when you put it out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell a total stranger, and I almost guarantee you that they're going to care. They'll care enough to listen and to help you out. And that's part of the point of this walk, too, not just for civilians and people that don't understand to realize that, yes, it's almost an epidemic. This is 22 people a day. That's ridiculous. That shouldn't be happening.
No.
But then also, you know, if a veteran comes along and he sees all these people walking in protest of that 22, you know that all of us in this group care. So if you're thinking of doing something, you're down, come talk to anybody that's going to be walking and we'll care. And I think that's a statement that needs to be made, not, you know, that we care. People care. We don't want to see you guys go. We want to help. You know, we appreciate what you've done for our country, and we don't want you to take your own life. We want to have you here with us.
Right. Don't give up.
So,
you've already been through the worst part of your life, probably. Don't give up. And
exactly.
We are there. We are there to help you, and we're going to be out there walking and rolling on Saturday, July 7th. And that's beginning at the Ann Arbor VA, and you said at what time?
At 10 a.m. is check-in. There'll be activities at 10, and at 11 a.m. we'll be walking.
Okay. Well, I hope to be there. And I think I have another fundraiser that I'm supposed to do, but we'll figure out something to make sure that we're represented there. So I encourage people to go to the WACU site. That's warriorsandcaregiversunited.org, WACU.org. All kinds of information on there about the organization and the events that are coming up, and you can make a donation to help this great group continue with their mission. So thank you, Lauren, very much for being on Veterans Radio, and God bless you.
Thank you for having me.
God bless you.
Thank you.
All righty. All right. Mark your calendar, folks. Don't miss out on this opportunity to bring awareness to veteran suicide. It's just not acceptable at all anymore. All right. We're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, we've got a I can't say the word. We have a very compelling story to talk about. The book is entitled Standing Up After Vietnam. It's a triumphant story of hope, determination, and reinvention of a young woman who grew up in Vietnam, eventually was able to escape Vietnam, and has just made a wonderful life for herself and her family. And I want you to meet her in about 2 minutes. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after this. We're back on Veterans Radio, and that music is from called the Symphony for the Sons of Nam, and it was written by James Kimo Williams, and it's a very powerful piece that I found. So you can look it up online. If you look up James Kimo Williams, K-I-M-O Williams, he's a Vietnam veteran who came back and went to music school, and now he's a composer. Great story. Speaking of great stories, how's that for a segue? All right. Right now, joining us on Veterans Radio, I have two great guests. Number one is Thuong Tran, who was born in Saigon and developed polio as a toddler, and that's a whole other story. But when she immigrated to America, she had surgery and intense physical therapy that finally enabled her to stand upright after 17 years. I'm not going to tell the whole story yet because it's a great story. But you know, you've got to pay attention here because we're going to learn a lot about what Vietnam was like after the Americans left. And it's probably this untold story of what was occurring during that time period. And so I want you to make sure that you pay attention. If you have a question, give us a call here at Veterans Radio. That number is 734-822-1600. And also with us is the co-writer of this article, and that is Sharon Orlop. And Sharon works for Walmart. She was in charge, Global Chief Diversity Officer and Senior Vice President of Human Resources for Walmart. And she has created a unique experimental immersion trips to teach others about different cultures. And so I want to welcome you both. So Thuong, welcome to Veterans Radio. Hello? I think I lost her. Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good to be here, Dale.
Hi, Sharon. Maybe we can try and reach back to Thuong. Am I pronouncing her name correctly?
It's Thuong.
Thuong. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I always embarrass myself. You know,
that's okay.
Oh, you're fine, Dale. I'm here.
Okay. Hi. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale, and thank you for having us.
I love the book. I have to say that right now. I found it very most interesting and just a great emotional study and a great story of determination and just determination. Just that's the whole idea of the human story. So let me go back to you, Thuong. Tell me a little bit about what was going on when you were a child and you know the North Vietnamese took over.
Yes, definitely. When I was 1965, that means the U.S. troops withdraw from Saigon, Vietnam, right? And then that is because the poor Saigon, or the South Vietnamese call it, is the Black April, 1975. And at that time, it was like close to five years old. And it was very completely... I would say it's the world upside down. All of the Vietnamese, not only myself, my family, my mom, my older brother, my middle sister, but most of the Vietnamese people from the South had facing a lot of mistreatment, poverty, and of course, there's no freedom at all, zero freedom, and everything under control with the communists. So a lot of people lost their house when the Viet Cong, that is the North Communist troop, right? They took the house or the people, and the people become homeless in sudden, like overnight. And then with a lot of forced control that they've been forced to go to, went to the apartment, such as my family as well, my mom and my brother sister, even though they are, they were at young age, like early teenage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. Even until now, it's still very emotional to talk about it because it's so raw and so real and it's so tough and difficult. So all the people help each other out to be through that tough time.
Well, we have done programs about the, quote, the fall of Saigon, as you mentioned, that Black April Day. And
yes.
Just there's the confusion that reigned during not just that day, but the weeks leading up to it, and, of course, the weeks after it. And your father got caught up in this confusion, and I thought that was one of the more powerful parts of the story, was that your dad was an air traffic controller with the Vietnamese.
Yes, he was the air traffic controller in the South, North Vietnam, under the South troop. And then he worked very closely with along with the U.S. troop. So he been stationed like Tân Sơn Nhất Airport, then Da Nang Airport, and also Cần Thơ. So it was very intense that during the war zone, right, it's really like busy air traffic. All the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he was under all, like very intensive. So one time he stays in Da Nang and my mom, my brother, sister, because of the war zone and also the intensive, the fighting between the South Vietnam troop and the North Vietnam. So that's why he afraid that it will be dangerous for us. So that's we live in the Saigon city with my uncle family and my grandma house. At that time, the house was very close to Tân Sơn Nhất Airport, just right behind the airport.
Oh, I know where that is.
So, from time to time, my mom took me and my brother and sister to visit my dad in the Da Nang Airport at that time. So I was very young at that time. So one time only that I remember when my dad, my mom took us to visit dad, was he took us tour the city on the tricycle. You know, there's a tricycle that means people can sit in there, and then the men sit behind and just pedal along the side,
mm-hmm.
which I've seen. So those are that's the only memories I had during that time.
Well, Sharon, I want to bring you in on this because you helped write this story. And I guess, how did you get involved in this?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. Tu Hong worked at Walmart for 7 years, and I worked there for 12 years, but we did not know each other. And
okay.
I had retired from Walmart and moved to Arizona, and a year later, one of my mentees said that if I was ever back in Arkansas, I should meet Tu Hong, that she had an interesting story, and that's all he said to me. And so I met her near Thanksgiving of 2016, and we had coffee, and she shared her story, and I was like, we need to write a book about this. And she said, well, I've been looking for the right person to help me write it. And I said, pick me. And that following Sunday, we started talking every Sunday by FaceTime and putting the book together. And then I spent several weeks in Arkansas with Tu Hong and her father at their home for hours, interviewing them, eating with them, getting to know them. And I really am so humbled and appreciative that they invited me into their lives and shared their story with me, because it's an amazing odyssey.
I think what's so great about this story is that the American people don't understand what the Vietnamese civilians had to go through when we left.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, and I don't want to give the whole story away, although I'd love to. I'd love to. But you know, the whole idea of hiding from the VC as the NVA when they're coming into Saigon, and you've dug a deep hole in your kitchen floor. And for the whole family to hide in, I can't imagine the fears that must have been going through. And plus, your dad is gone, and you didn't know where he was. This is for Tu Hong. Tu Hong.
Yes, correct. At that time, because of it's so quick, so everyone, the neighbor, helped us to dig in the bunker, like small little bunker in our kitchen, to hide all the debris and all the bombing. And it was, like you said, there is it was really scary, especially for me at that time, because we only like my mom, my brother, sister, and we wonder at that time we completely lost contact with our dad, and we didn't know that, I mean, where he was and what happened to him. The only thing at that time we were just praying that that he be safe, and then praying that we've been through this tough time together with at least my mom, my brother and sister, and myself. But the scary, the frightening experience that when I was under the bunker with all the debris skid on the roof metal, that is so like scary, and all the siren went through that the neighbor. It was like we didn't know that would be next. What would be happen next? We just praying and hungry at the same time as well.
Because, I know.
We didn't have a we just ate whatever we have. We just hide inside the house completely for the whole day and night.
We're coming up on a quick break here, so I've got to ask you to hang around. We're going to take a news and a couple of announcements, and then we'll be back with your story. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. We're back on Veterans Radio, and that's another. This is another part of the symphony. This is called "Mystery of the Mekong," and it's by Billy Bang. It's another part of a particular album of music that is produced by Vietnam veterans. Kind of cool, I thought. Anyway, we are talking with two amazing women in their own right, Tuang Tran, who was born in Saigon, and we're trying to figure out how to get her out of there. And Sharon Orlop, who helped write the story. And Sharon, I want to go back to you for just a second. How did I know you mentioned that this is something that you had to write. What was your reaction when you heard the story of Tuang's life?
So what amazed me the most is she's probably the most positive, energetic person that I've ever met. And so listening to her challenges around polio, around the end of the war and poverty and centralized agriculture, the oppressive regime policies, and then being separated from her dad for 15 years and then creating a new life for her in America and getting her college degree and working in IT departments. I mean, the whole thing, it's like there were so many narrative arcs and so many continual challenges that she just always focused on how can she learn from the situation, how can she improve her situation, and how can she keep moving forward. And so to me, her situations pale in comparison to anything I've been through or that most of us have been through. And so I think her story gives us hope and helps us understand what grit and determination can really do for a person.
Well, I couldn't agree more. the book that we're talking about here is entitled Standing Up After Saigon. And let's go and see. What do we mean by standing up after Saigon? So, Tuang, you developed polio at a very early age.
Yes, sir. I had the polio when I was like 2.5 years old.
And how did you, I'm giving it away. I know that. How were you able to get around? I mean, all these escape things that were happening, you weren't able to walk.
Yes. So when I first developed polio, the first thing that helped me to move around, I crawl on the ground, like use my two hand as a leg, and then I drag my leg along on the on the ground. So that's why I had a lot of the holes on my hand by the knee, because the knee just dragged on the ground, so that's why it just created all the holes. So my mom patching it very often. So when I get a little bit older, that is, I think Sharon mentioned earlier that I kept reinventing and see how I can manage and get it better day by day. So I figured out a way and found a way that crawling on the floor is like take forever for me to moving around and hang around with the kid and the neighbor. Mm-hmm. So I decided to sit up and squatting. Use my two hands moving one leg at a time, squatting on the floor like that.
I take that.
Play around with. Yes.
That's hard to, that's even hard to envision and how difficult it was to move. And in fact, just before the fall of Saigon, were you not scheduled to go somewhere for treatment, weren't you?
Yes, went back before 1975, right? And when I had polio, my dad and my mom had they have been seeking a lot of treatment for me, but didn't get any better. So my dad have been was able to get a paperwork for me travel to West Germany to get the treatment for polio at that time. And the schedule had been set up that it would be in June 1975. And my mom, I remember my mom, my dad took me to the market and bought a new suitcase, new clothes for me. And as a kid, I just was so happy that I got the luggage and I got the new clothes, but I didn't know that I would be traveling to West Germany by myself. Mm-hmm. And then April 30th, 1975, the fall of Saigon came. So everything, my life changed completely, and everything turned upside down since then.
Yeah, and I would say it turned upside down, and you know, no pun intended with that one, because your life did change so dramatically. Sharon, you mentioned in the press kit for the book that she had some difficulty in writing chapters, and one that was really difficult was the one about her father disappearing without them knowing what had actually happened to him. This is Chin, and could you kind of share a little bit of that information with us?
I will. To me, it was kind of the crux of the story, because he had wanted to remain behind in Saigon. He was worried about his family. In particular, he was worried about Tu Hong, and he knew how people who were disabled were treated in Vietnam. So he was torn on whether he should stay or leave, and he ended up leaving at the last minute on April 30th, and he changed helicopters, but his suitcase was on one helicopter that crashed, and so his suitcase fell to the ground, and the family was told that he had died, and so they actually held a mass service for him, a funeral service for him, and mourned his passing when, in fact, he had escaped the United States.
I was trying to imagine the courage it had to make that decision for him, and how difficult it had to be. And then, of course, without the family knowing exactly what had happened, they must have been devastated. I'm sure that you and your whole family were devastated by that.
Yes. Two days later, when we found out, and we saw the North Vietnamese troops marching through our alleys and on the street, and we knew that now our life would be changed. And we didn't know, where our dad, because there's so many men have been in captured. They captured, put in prison, and we didn't know, where our dad was. Mm-hmm. So that's one, his close friend who stayed behind, because his wife was give birth to his son anytime sooner. So he came to our house and gave my mom my dad's suitcase, and he said that he saw my dad helicopter crash into the river. So we definitely was like devastated, and then crying, and just accepted that that's going to be gone forever. So that's what we move on with our life. And for the Vietnamese people, we have a morning session. So we had that for continued to carry the mornings for 3 years.
You had to, when the North Vietnamese took over, they changed everything. I mean, the explanation in the book, it's just frightening to me. Not only did they change your address, because they renamed all the streets and renumbered all the streets, so your father's letters didn't get through to you, but they also came into everyone's house and took everything, mostly photographs. Yes. One of the stories that you mentioned is that you had to destroy most of the photographs of the family. Could you explain that?
Yes. Like you mentioned that they took people house, and they order everyone that anything paper picture that related to the South Vietnamese in general, and anything especially like any people that have been working with the U.S. troop and to the South Vietnamese military. So and they said that if anyone not obeyed their orders, they will be either kill them or disappear overnight. So that's what everyone I remember in my neighbor, especially it's like the alley, because so many alleys, so it's narrow. So the house, you can just step about one or two steps and you can walk to the other people's house.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone have a bucket in front of their house to put all the stuff, like birth certificate, pictures, anything. Music sheet and videos, cassette at that time, cassette tape, everything needs to be burned down. So that happened to me, and my mom was scared. And of course, I mean, she just had to do whatever they asked or ordered her to do, right? And I just make, at that time, I just say, no, these are my memories of my dad. I even though that, of course, I remember his in my memories, but these are the picture that we had him. Mm-hmm. That's the only way. So that's why I hide a few things in a tin can. And because of the, on the dirt and the soil, in my kitchen at that time, surrounding, is still there. It's still like fresh and soft. So I just hidden the tin can really quick, in those, soil and dirt.
I like the way that you hid that tin can. It was very clever of you, because it becomes very important to you. Sharon, we're talking with the authors. Hold on, I've got to do a little plug here for you folks. We're talking to the authors of Standing Up After Saigon. It's the story of Thu Hang Tran, and it was written with Sharon Orlop. And it's a story of a young woman with polio who is trying to survive in the chaos after the Americans left Vietnam in April of 1975. And her father was able to escape, but he was not able to communicate with the family. And Sharon, you talked with Chin. Could you kind of describe his feelings about that?
I sure will. He was so torn. And to me, one of the most poignant memories that he shared that's in the book is he escaped by helicopter. He went to Khon San Island. Then he got on a ship, and then he met up with the U.S. 7th Fleet that was out helping a lot of South Vietnamese who were leaving. And so many of the 7th Fleet and a lot of South Vietnamese vessels pulled into the Philippine Bay. And Ferdinand Marcos was the president of the Philippines at the time, and he was one of the first world leaders to recognize the new state of Vietnam under communist rule. And so they were going to turn back all of these vessels that were coming into the Philippines. But an agreement was worked out that since the vessels had originally been provided or a part of the U.S. During the war, that there would be a transfer of power, and the South Vietnamese flags were lowered on these vessels and the American flags raised. And at the time that happened, you heard the South Vietnamese national anthem being sung by all these refugees on the boats as they lowered the flags. And I just, that story really touched me a lot.
It just gave me goosebumps. Just imagining that you're, you know, you have to, that you're escaping your homeland and you don't know where you're going. Let's put it that way. Cause the story of Chin, when he got to America, when he finally got to America, was not the easiest story either. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
I will. So he came in through Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, which was interesting because later he and Tuhong lived in northwest Arkansas. So he came into Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. And if there were any employers in the United States who wanted to sponsor any of the immigrants and refugees from Vietnam, they had to provide housing and jobs. So a woman who owned the concession stand at Mount Rushmore sponsored Chin, and he ended up moving to South Dakota. All he had was the clothes on his back. When he was picked up at the airport, the couple who met him said, "Do you have any luggage?" He said, "No, I just have the clothes on my back." And basically his room and board was sharing a very, very small room with three other college students. There were two bunk beds, and he got up every morning at 4 a.m. to be a short order cook. He learned how to crack 8 eggs at a time, 4 in each hand. and so he's working, you know, for low wages, but was having a job. He's very focused on, he wanted additional education. He wanted to continue to improve himself, but he was worried about angering his sponsor because she felt she'd provided him with room and board and he should be happy with that.
That's a great part of the story. And I encourage people to go out and get this book. It's very inspirational, not only for Thuang, how did you finally get out of Vietnam?
When we mourned in our death for 3 years, right, and we mourned with our life. And then one day, like you mentioned earlier, that when the Viet Cong took over the South Vietnam and they changed everything, they changed address, they changed every single house number, street names, alley names and everything. So my dad couldn't able to locate us because he remembered our own address. Mm-hmm. So 5 years later, we found out that my dad was alive and he lived in San Antonio, Texas at that time. So then because of the control from the Viet Cong, every single letter that either my dad sent to us or we sent it to my dad, it took about 6 months.
Wow.
So it took a long time, all the process and all of that. And when my dad was able to look at us he asking us to send him the whatever we have, like a birth certificate and the pictures, so that means he can process the paper to sponsor us to the state. So that's where the picture and those birth certificate that I hidden in a tin can came to very useful at that time. And that's what when we mailed to our dad, and then went through the program they call the ODP, Operational Departure Program, that allowed the Vietnamese military who worked along with the U.S. troops was able to sponsor their family to the United States. So my dad processed the paper and everything like 1980, and then we didn't reunited with him until like in the fall of 1989.
Oh. Talk about governments working slowly, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, Thuang, describe your meeting your father again. How did that feel to you?
So it was really exciting. Actually, it was very strange feeling because usually when you go to another country, you have some sort of worry and then kind of afraid of what will be next, right? But it happened to me at that time. I didn't have any that kind of feeling, like worry or scare or like not even the second thought. It's just like happy. And the main key was that we want to be united with our dad for a long period of time. That the other one was because I feel like God brought him back to us from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because we already mourned him for 3 years, and now we're going to be reunited with him. So it's no matter what, though I just want anything, but the big thing is we're going to be seeing him after that.
I can't imagine how excited you must have been. Your whole family all came over. There was either another separation because your brother had gotten married in the meantime, and he left his wife in Vietnam with the promise that he was going to bring her over. And then we kind of get into the whole Americanization of you. And we've only got about 4 minutes left. So I know that you don't crawl around on the floor anymore because of the treatment that you were able to get here. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. After 3 years, my brother was able to bring his wife and his son to the United States to unite with him.
That's terrific. And then you went through all kinds of hospitalizations and so forth so that you were able to stand on your own and walk. Is that correct?
That's correct. Because my dad had prepared everything for me, so he bought the insulin, even though I was still living in Vietnam at that time. So I came to the United States, and he said my first thing was I would need to get a surgery and go through the physical therapy. And after very intensive physical therapy, I was able to stand up for a long time, and I was able to walk with the crutches and wear leg braces.
It's an amazing story. I wish I could meet you just to shake your hand and congratulate you for your determination. We're coming up to the end of the hour, unfortunately. And so is there anything that I'm going to go to Sharon? Is there anything you would like to say in the last couple of minutes?
I think it's just an inspiring book and one that has universal themes of family love, of determination, of hope, and how do you reinvent yourself when you face significant obstacles. So to me, it applies all across the world to every single person. So I encourage people to read it because it's an amazing journey of Tu Hong, and she's an incredible woman.
And part of an incredible family, and you are as well for writing this with her. And thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
And Tu Hong, what would you like to say to the American audience?
I hope that with this memoir book, that someday it will be and can encourage others when they are even down or have a bad day or hit the rock bottom. So with me, building hope, focus, and then determine that is the key for me to move forward. So I hope that it will give all the readers the comfort and also the inspiration.
It certainly did for me, and I want to thank you both so very much for doing it and writing this book and getting it out. I know you can find it on Amazon. They have a website, standingupaftersaigon.com. I strongly urge you to go and look at this book and buy this book because I think it's a great story, and all Vietnam veterans need to read this as well because you'll find out what you are fighting for there. So, ladies, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale.
Thank you so much, Dale.
Thank you, and I'll get a copy of this to you as soon as I can.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All righty.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Last week we did some music written by Vietnam veterans, and one in particular, Echoes of Vietnam by Joe Scarlett, got a lot of great response to. And since we were just talking about Vietnam, I thought we would replay Joe's song for you as we go out today. You know, if you're a Vietnam veteran, it's time that you start feeling good about what you did over there and let people thank you. I've had many more people come up to me recently in the last couple of weeks, actually, that said thank you for your service and so forth. And accept it graciously and say thank you very much. I say thank you. It was an honor for me to serve for our country. So we're going to play this song for you, and then we'll be back next week. Thank you very much for listening to Veterans Radio. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. Go to our website. Contact us. Story ideas. Anything you want us to talk about. We are Veterans Radio, the voice of America's veterans, and we will be back next week. And until then, you are dismissed.
Island, while others went to Yale, I learned to shoot
an M14 while others learn to sail. I volunteered for duty when I finished up high school. Yes, I'm a vet from Vietnam, and I'm glad it's finally cool. I didn't go to college for an MBA degree, but I earned the rank of sergeant, and I kept some people free. My war was not too popular, and some thought me a fool, but I'm a vet from Vietnam, and I'm glad it's finally cool. We shed our blood in the monsoon mud, the jungles and the streets. Our battle cry was Semper Fi, we wouldn't take defeat. As you go about your daily life, if you see a vet from now, walk up to him, tell him welcome home. I came back home in 68 to a world that didn't care. I couldn't get a decent job, 'cause I'd been over there. A lot of folks thought I was bad, they said I broke the rules. But I'm a vet from Vietnam, and I'm glad it's finally cool. We shed our blood in the monsoon mud, the jungles and the streets. Our battle cry was Semper Fi, we wouldn't take defeat. As you go about your daily life, if you see a vet from now, walk up to him, tell him welcome home. Well, the war was over years ago, and the hate burned itself out. Now people want to know us vets and what we were about. Why they're even making movies for the curious to see. If you really want to know the truth, go ask a vet like me. Shed our blood in the monsoon mud, the jungles and the streets. Our battle cry was Semper Fi, we wouldn't take defeat. As you go about your daily life, if you see a vet from now, walk up to him, tell him welcome home. They say that time will heal all wounds, and it surely healed mine. I've got a wife and family now, and I think I'm doing fine. I never will forget that war, or the men with whom I do. 'Cause I'm a vet from Vietnam, and I'm glad it's finally cool. We shed our blood in the monsoon mud, the jungles and the streets. Our battle cry was Semper Fi, we wouldn't take defeat. As you go about your daily life, if you see a vet from now, walk up to him.